Revelation chapter 11 today. Revelation chapter 11. Now, I have to apologize for something. Last week, I gave a little teaser at the end of the class about the two witnesses and insinuating, implying that today we would actually be discussing the two witnesses here in chapter 11. After looking at the text again and thinking through things, I'm going to wait on that. We're going to just focus on the first two verses because these really intrigued me the more I was studying it, especially with some current events. So we're just going to highlight this morning verses 1 and 2. And just a reminder again, next week is the 14th. We will not be having this class. Everyone will be upstairs in the auditorium. We're having a guest speaker, David Minnick, missionary and deputation to go to Australia. So he'll be here presenting his ministry with us in the discipleship class hour next Sunday. So make your plans for that as well. All right, so today, chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. Could someone please just read those two verses? Anyone want to volunteer to read? Maybe someone who has not read before? Just two verses. This is the week to read. All right, Angela, go for it.
Then I was given a measuring rod like a staff, and I was told, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship there. But do not measure the court outside the temple. Leave that out, for it is given over to the nations. And they will trample the holy city for 42 months.
All right, very good. Thank you. All right, so let me begin here with a question, and this will really help lead us into the discussion. What is John told to measure here? I tried not to have a real hard question to start. Okay, the temple. Okay, he's told to measure the temple, and it says the altar, and those who worship there. But it's primarily talking here about the temple. Okay, this is just an artist depiction. This is not real. This is not from John's Facebook page or Instagram or anything like that. Okay, this is just a depiction of this John measuring the temple. But I think it does give an accurate idea of this rod. The rod that John was told to use here, a measuring rod, it was taken from a reed, a sturdy reed, a plant, which measured naturally between 15 and 20 feet. The word itself that's used here in the text is referenced several other times and used in a variety of different ways. It's used, for instance, to reference Aaron's rod in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 4. It's also used several times in Revelation to speak of Christ ruling with a rod of iron. It's also translated as scepter or used to refer to a staff. Okay, all those different ideas, and depends on the context, of course, but they're all used in this context. This reed was the tool that John used to measure. In verse 1, the angel tells John to measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. And remember, this follows right on the heels of the end of chapter 10, which we talked about last week of so-called John's recommissioning. God is recommissioning John to go and still prophesy again about many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. And then he's told to measure. Now, does this idea of John measuring the temple, does that kind of raise any questions in anybody's mind? It is kind of an odd thing, right? John, I want you to prophesy again to many nations, and as you do so, I want you to measure the temple and the altar and those who worship there. The question that comes to my mind is, what in the world is this? What is God telling him to do? What is this instruction meaning to measure these things? Now, the purpose of the measurement doesn't seem to be to know the physical dimensions of it. And one of the reasons why is because he's told to also measure the people, those who worship there. So would that mean that he's supposed to measure the height or the breadth or something of the people? Well, that wouldn't seem to make just sense from this.
Is it more to signify that an impact still exists?
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. I think the idea also has, the word itself is used in other times in the New Testament. Let me give one example. This is from 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. I didn't put it up here. If you want to turn there, you can, just to see it. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, which says, "For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." The word is used there as well. Now, the word seems to be some kind of marking off of sorts, including the people, in comparison to others. I think in that 2 Corinthians 12 or 10 passage, you have this idea of measuring and comparing used right in conjunction with each other, right? You're not going to compare yourselves or measure yourselves one to another. And I wonder if that is somewhat the case here in the text as well of Revelation 11, that God is marking, he's making some kind of comparison, so to speak, this marking off between one certain group and another certain group of people. Because he notice it also says, leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and don't measure it. So there's some kind of delineation between what he is supposed to measure and by what he's not supposed to measure. Now, there really is no agreement in any of the material that I read as I was studying this text with regards to what this is specifically referring to. In other words, there's still a lot of questions that people have. What is John really doing? And even why? I put up here a quote from one commentator. He says, "In turning to the matters in 11:1 to 14, we come to a passage that is universally recognized as difficult to interpret." And if he's going to say that, I am not going to disagree, because I agree wholeheartedly, because this is it does seem to come kind of out of the blue. And he goes from John's recommissioning at the end of chapter 10, measuring the temple, and then to the two witnesses. Now, I don't know all the answers. I've said that many times before. But again, it does seem to have something to do, at least as I see it, some kind of measuring out or marking off between something Jewish and something Gentile. Okay, because those outside the court, those were Gentiles. And I'll show that here in a diagram here in just a minute. So some have speculated, well, could it mean perhaps that this is the church in comparison to the Gentiles? Okay, could John be told, is this measuring the temple of God, the altar, those who worship there? Is this a reference here generically to the church as opposed to the Gentiles? Well, I would say no, because the church has already been raptured. The church is gone by this time between Revelation 3 and 4. Is that right? Right? Yep. Yeah, I'll get to that in just a moment. I'll put that up here and we'll describe that here in just a minute. Good question, though. Yes. So I'm not going to be overly dogmatic about what this passage means, but it would seem, again, to make sense that it has something to do with some kind of protection or marking off of certain people, probably the Jews, especially in the second half of the tribulation period, in light of the final judgments to come that John is told to prophesy about. Steve?
Could it also maybe just indicate to the readers that this is a literal temple, that this isn't just a figurative type thing too, because won't there be a temple being rebuilt at the time? So if there literally is a measuring of a temple, but it's an actual physical structure that will be there.
Sure.
Just to indicate that it's that factor.
Yeah, there will be something there for sure. Now notice verse 2, it says he was to leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and not measure it, because it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. Okay, so this is a description here of this outer court of the Gentiles. So I'm going to put up a picture here. This is a diagram of Herod's temple. Okay, this is the temple that was in place during the time of Christ and the apostles. By the time John writes this, this temple is no more, right? Because the temple was destroyed in AD 70. But this is the last temple that would have been referenced here. So this is a diagram of the temple. I'm sorry if you cannot read this, but I'll just try to mark it out. So this right here and on this side, it's designated as the Gentiles' courtyard. So there was a courtyard of the Gentiles. There's also a courtyard of women. And then the inner courtyard. This outer courtyard of the Gentiles, they could not proceed past that point. And all around the structure here, the main structure, there were placards telling the Gentiles they could not pass, or else they would die. Yeah.
So even if they were believing Gentiles, they could not pass.
They could not.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a reference to what this is referring to here. This is leave out the court, which is outside the temple. Do not measure it. It's been given to the Gentiles. Okay. Okay, Angela?
When it says do not measure the court outside the temple, is that still within that structure? And that was...
Yeah, so there's the whole thing, which is generally spoken of as the temple. And then there's the temple proper.
Okay, because then it says that leave that out, for it is given over to the nations, and they will trample the holy city.
Yep.
So I have the wrong impression, of course. Is Jerusalem the holy city, or are they referring just to the temple? I mean, why would...
Jerusalem.
Okay, so why is... So they're going to be trampled over the exterior, the court outside the temple... And the city
will be trampled by the Gentiles. Yeah, yeah.
So could the temple itself be almost like a refuge during this period for those who become believers during the tribulation?
Well, again, could it be? I'm not going to be over the dogmatic about anything. It seems to be something Jewish as opposed to Gentile. And again, that's about as far as I can tell. Yeah, John.
There's a note in my Bible that says the measuring of the temple signifies God's measuring of the spiritual condition of the Jewish people, and it references Ezekiel 40 and Zechariah 2.
Yeah, so Ezekiel 40, we're going to get to that here in a minute. That's a good note. Okay, now, this brings up a question, and I thought this would be a good thing for us to do today. Up to this point, the last, 6 or 7 weeks now, we've been pretty much tackling a chapter at a time. Of Revelation. I want to kind of pause from that pace for at least a few weeks. So I think now is a good time. These next few chapters are going to bring up different topics. And this is the first one, the first major one that I'll see. The two witnesses will also be its own topic. But here we have this topic of the temple. Which temple is John told to measure? Is this an earthly or a heavenly temple? Any guesses?
Okay,
it's earthly. Okay. How do you know that?
Because there's space for those
that are... Yeah, okay, so it mentions here the Gentiles, and it mentions all these things to measure those who are outside the temple. Well, that wouldn't seem to make a lot of sense if this was some kind of heavenly temple. Yeah, Deb?
It seems that when he is describing something that's heavenly, it gets really almost hard to understand. He's searching for words.
Sure. Yep.
And explanations, and that we are like, wow.
Yeah.
But he's not having to do that.
It's more difficult to explain. Yeah, right. Ian, are you going to say something? No? Okay. Yeah, this is an earthly temple that John is told to measure. It's like he is now being invited to take part in this revelation of sorts. He is now a player, not just an observer. It's really an interesting thing to consider. Again, I don't have all the answers to that. But that seems to be what is going on here. So what I want to focus on today is the idea of that temple. In your Bible, there are, I'm going to call, 5 earthly temples that we see here from a Jewish standpoint. Okay, some would say 4. I'm just going to say five for our sake today, and I'll explain that, explain why here in just a minute. But there are five temples that we are told about in the scripture. And let's start with the first one. What is the first temple that comes to the Jewish people? Who built it? Moses built the tabernacle. Solomon built the first temple. So let's start here with Solomon's temple. Okay, Solomon is the one who built the first temple. David wanted to. Right, remember that? David said, you know, I have this beautiful house, but there's no permanent place for the Lord, basically. So he had the thought to build the temple. But the Lord said no, because he was a man of war, but that his son would build it instead. So David spent a lot of his last years, his last days, helping to gather resources and materials for Solomon to help build this temple. So Solomon's one who built it. You can see it described in 2 Kings chapter 6. And it describes this building, and it says it took 7 years to complete. It's just normally referred to as Solomon's temple. It was a grand building. And here's again, artist renditioning. It's not Solomon's personal snapshot. There's a diagram kind of thing from what all the descriptions that we can see. A basic diagram of what this temple would have been. So you see the main altar here. This is the laver, the molten sea, the big basin of water for cleansing. Remember the two pillars that are described here, Boaz and Jachin. You have the holy place, the tables of showbread, and the candlesticks. You have the altar of incense, and of course the veil, and inside is the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, basic diagram, rough approximate scale, a little over 150 feet or so long. Okay, really a wonderful temple. That temple was used by Jerusalem, by Judah, when this kingdom split, especially, until the Babylonian captivity in 586 BC. The city was destroyed. The temple was burned at that time. Okay, that's the first temple. When was the second temple built? Yes. So Cyrus makes the decree after the captivity for Jews to go back and to rebuild, not just the city, but even to rebuild the temple. And this is one, this is referred to normally as, well, I'm just going to call it Zerubbabel's temple. Okay, he goes, the people go back, and it took about 20 years to build. It took time, and they had to be reminded to build by a couple of the prophets to build the temple. But this took about 20 years to complete. We find the description of its being built in Ezra chapter 6. This temple went through a lot of rough times. So this is after the captivity. So it was completed in 516 BC. So after that was Malachi was the final prophet. Then we have this quote-unquote intertestamental period. All those years, a lot of chaos, a lot of turmoil in the nation. And the temple itself went through a lot of rough times over the course of years until the Romans took over. And then someone had the idea to remodel the temple. And who was that? Okay, that was Herod. So this is where I'm going to call this the third temple, but some say it's still the second temple. It's just Herod's just remodeling it, basically. But for our sakes, my sake, I'm just going to call it the third temple. So this is Herod's temple. I showed this diagram here a couple minutes ago. Herod decides to build massive renovation to the temple, expand it. And it was basically finished during the life of Christ, though from what I understand, there were some little final details that were not completed until the mid-60s. But this is the temple that Jesus would have known, that the apostles would have known, first century church would have known. Okay, this is the temple. Herod had done this. From a Jewish standpoint, that would have been very kind for him to do. But he wasn't a great man. We know that. Okay, but it was just part of his personal building conquest kind of thing. This temple survived until AD 70. And what happened in the year 70? What's that?
The diaspora.
Okay, the diaspora, and what else? What happened in Jerusalem?
Romans.
And what do? They destroyed it. major Jewish revolt, and the Romans under the general Titus came into the city and destroyed the temple in AD 70, which, of course, Christ forecasted or prophesied that that would take place. Okay, again, this temple is not viewed by all as a distinct temple, but I was just thinking the chronology of things. I'm just going to call it the third temple. I'm going to jump to the fifth temple. Or let me give one more diagram here. This is a diagram of this same temple. Again, you have this is the court of women here. Outside here is the court of the Gentiles. And they have, you can't read this, I'm sure, but it says, upon the pillars surmounting this elegant wall were inscriptions in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin, forbidding any Gentile or otherwise unclean persons from entering in under penalty of death. Okay, so these placards in Hebrew, Latin, and Greek, that the Gentiles could not proceed past this wall. Okay, they have this diagram here of the court of the temple. Okay, we're going to jump ahead to the fifth temple. This is the last temple that we have in the scripture, that we have mentioned in the scripture. And which temple is that? Which temple is still to come in the distant, distant future? Well, at least from our standpoint. Any sense? You going to guess? No?
Millennial temple.
This is the one that's mentioned in Ezekiel 40 through 48. This is, I'm just calling it the fifth and final temple that's mentioned in the scripture. The glory of God will be there. This will be an incredibly beautiful, I'm sorry, this is not it. This is a temple comparison. Oh, I wanted to put this up here for size comparison. So this is Herod's temple. This is Solomon's temple. Okay? You can see how this was a grand one in their day, and Herod just dwarfed it.
But did Solomon's have a Gentile section or not?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. Okay? Now, here is Ezekiel's temple. This is how it's described. It's a massive square-like area. And it has this river that goes right through the middle of it. And you can read Ezekiel 40 and 48, and you can see the different descriptions there. But this is what's called the millennial temple. And all that goes on during that time will be a constant reminder of Christ's atoning death. Yes, sir?
What does Revelation 21:22 mean?
Well, that's the New Jerusalem. Right? That wouldn't be the millennium.
But did you notice what he said here? That's something he didn't see there?
Yeah, I saw no temple in it. What's the it?
What does that mean?
What is the it?
He says, I saw, well, the it, having to do with the new city.
Right.
Having to do with the new system that God's preparing. But
yeah.
My point is, what does it mean when he says no temple? He didn't see a temple.
Right, there's no temple.
He explains what he did see about Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, so the millennial kingdom would come before this. In that time, there is a temple. And then when the new Jerusalem comes down out of heaven, apparently that temple is
now,
no more.
When you say there is a temple, do you mean the earthly temple or do you mean a heavenly temple?
It'll be on earth.
No, what I'm getting at is that John saw in heaven, all right? He saw the new Jerusalem, prepared as a bride, and so forth.
Yeah.
But he noticed that he did not see a temple there.
Right.
But he did see the glory of God and Christ, the land, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Abraham lived for a city, which was that spiritual city. That city is coming down from God out of heaven.
Yeah.
Okay. On earth, we know that the things of the earth here, that will be all eliminated in the new system of what God has will come down. But all I'm saying is that looking at this, it looks like there won't be a temple to do all the sacrifices and all that was the whole purpose of the temple. But the temple now is going to be, from what I'm noticing here, Christ, the glory of God, and so forth.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm saying that will come after this. That's later.
Now, wait a moment. That's coming after what?
The millennium.
So, what I'm getting at is that in the millennium,
mm-hmm.
okay, Christ will be on earth.
Mm-hmm.
The world will be destroyed, and then God will create the new heavens and the new earth and so forth after
right.
after everything has been, you know, done by the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But then the new heavens and new, then the new Jerusalem will come down from
right.
out of heaven.
And at that time, there will be no more temple.
Right, but before that, John did not see a temple in the New Jerusalem. Am I correct or not?
Right.
So what's the point?
The millennium is not the New Jerusalem. That's the distinction. Those are two different things.
The millennium, I know.
Yeah.
I know the,
so what you're reading here is about the New Jerusalem.
Right.
What I'm mentioning here is the millennium. And both of what we're saying is true. When John sees the New Jerusalem,
right.
there will be no temple there,
right.
for the Lamb is the glory.
Right.
But as Ezekiel prophesied, there is a temple in the millennial kingdom, which is different than this. Yeah.
So this is the 1,000-year reign.
Correct.
And then what he's talking about is after
that. After that, yeah. Correct. Yeah. All right, so you have this millennial temple, but there's a fourth temple. So I went 1, 2, 3, and 5. There's a fourth temple that the Bible mentions. What is that one? It doesn't mention explicitly, but there are passages that give really good implications that there needs to be. That is during the tribulation period. So let me give a couple of verses here. This is from Daniel's prophecy, Daniel 9. Okay, Daniel's prophecy in chapter 9 is the prophecy of the 70 weeks. We've mentioned that before. And that 70th week is the what we call the tribulation period. Daniel 9:27, he shall make a strong covenant with many for 1 week. This is the Antichrist. And for a half of the week, he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering. There's some kind of sacrifice and offering going on in that tribulation period. Jesus refers to this, Matthew 24:15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, this abominable sacrifice that is made, spoken by Daniel the prophet, Jesus mentioned that. Paul seems to refer to it as well, 2 Thessalonians 2. The man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now there's no, right, I said in Solomon's temple, we have the description of that being built in 2 Kings. We have information that's Ezra 6 about Zerubbabel's temple. There's all kinds of information about Herod's temple being built. We don't have a chapter in the Bible that describes the building of this temple. But the verses indicate that something is there. Some kind of temple is there. Angela?
Isn't the Islam, don't they have a temple in Jerusalem right now?
Yep.
So could that, I mean, that's not destroyed. So let's say in the next 1,000 years, you know, this Islam starts to happen. Could that actually be what they're talking about? And then that gets destroyed in the real temple? Or,
I don't know that would be the Jewish temple. But someplace on that place could be the temple,
right,
yes.
That's what I'm thinking, because it's supposed to be,
right.
The temple is supposed to be.
Yeah, and we're going to get there here in just a minute. You're thinking right. You're just thinking ahead. Okay? So we have this, I'm calling this the tribulation temple. Now our text here in Revelation 11, John is told to measure the temple of God. Okay, this is my guess. My guess is this is referring to the tribulation temple. The temple that would have been there during the tribulation period, right? Because we're right in the midst of that. And John is told to measure that temple. I gave you the verses in Daniel 9, Matthew 24, 2 Thessalonians 2. At some point during the beginning of the tribulation period, there will be a temple structure completed. Again, my guess, this is probably going to have something to do with the Antichrist covenant that he makes with Israel, this false peace that will come. And for a time, they will make sacrifice there, but then in the middle of this time, he will make this abominable sacrifice, the abomination of desolation, as it's referred to in there. And that's what these passages are referring to here. Now, we're not given any specific information as to when this temple will begin to be built or when it will be completed. But, and this is where I want to get into some current event stuff, it is interesting to see what has been going on in and around Jerusalem for a few years now. So let me give you some highlights of some things. December 6th, 2017, President Trump announced that the United States would recognize Jerusalem as the official capital of the nation of Israel. That was an unprecedented move, right? That was a big deal. Benjamin Netanyahu, try saying that name five times fast, he was thrilled about that move. And then on May 14th, 2018, the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem officially opened. This is the picture. This is the seal, the embassy seal. Ivanka was down there. I don't know who that guy is, but they were there to open this embassy. Now, why was this such a big deal? Why was this a big deal for Israel? Say that again?
The Arabs didn't like it. They claimed their ownership of that property.
Sure.
Temple Mount and all that.
Yep. They didn't like it.
Don't they have to have all their land back, including Jerusalem, in order for them to fulfill their promises or what they think the Messiah is coming?
Well, yeah. They didn't really gain any new land, though, with this. It was just a recognition of that being the capital and moving the embassy there. Ian?
Barad said gave further legitimacy to Jerusalem being the capital.
Okay.
We're on the world scene. And I don't know, my guess is maybe there's some esoteric alignment with maybe looking at the Arab point of view that, you know, the great Satan and the little Satan, hey, wait a minute, they're on the same page. I know that's outside of this study, but, yeah, you know, in the big picture, is there some correlation to that?
Maybe so. Maybe so. There's some interesting things that were said and even done after this. So the Israeli prime minister and others, because of this declaration, again, they didn't gain anything. It was a recognition that Jerusalem should be the capital. And U.S. moved the embassy to Jerusalem from, was it Tel Aviv, I think? Mm-hmm. From Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Huge move. And what they did, apparently, they even made a coin. And on this coin, the likeness of Trump and some other guy behind him, King Cyrus. And who was Cyrus? Laura? Decreed for Israel to go back after the captivity. And on the side here, it says Cyrus Balfour. What was the Balfour reference to? What is that reference to? Remember the Balfour Declaration? Maybe remember that? No one was alive at that time, okay? 1917, Balfour Declaration, English declared. Say that again? Yeah, the sovereignty of the nation of Israel. Big deal. So they have Cyrus, Balfour, and then Trump Declaration, 1917 to 2017, and then some Hebrew that I don't know. Okay, so this is an interesting thing. Now, why would they liken or link Trump with Cyrus?
Another nation recognizing Israel.
Another nation recognizing Israel? Yeah, Priscilla?
I was thinking that Cyrus helped to do the temple, and maybe this will bring in the temple.
Yes. And that's what the Jews link it to. Just like Cyrus, quote unquote, recognized Jerusalem, told the Jews to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. So now the Jews are somewhat linking Trump's declaration that Jerusalem is the capital as somewhat of a call for people to go to Jerusalem. And they're even taking that as, this is a preliminary to rebuild the temple itself. Let me read, there's an article here from WorldNet Daily from December the 10th, 2017. Trump's Jerusalem Declaration sparks talks of third temple. I'll read just a couple things here. While Muslims jeer, Israelis cheer President Trump's Jerusalem Declaration, prompting Jewish religious activists to suggest building the third temple to closer to reality than ever before. Now, remember, third temple, they're saying Zerubbabel's and Herod's are one, are the same. I mean, okay, so that's the second temple. This would be the third temple. What he did, quote, was an enormous step in bringing the temple, end quote, said Asaf Fried, official spokesman for the United Temple Movement, an association of organizations working towards making the third temple a reality. He added, this necessarily had to come from a non-Jew in order to bring them into the process so they will be able to take their part in the temple, end quote. Fried sees Trump's role similar to the one played by Cyrus, the Persian king, who ended the Babylonian exile and helped build the second Jewish temple. And I'll read one thing from back here. One quote, 1 year ago, this is from a spokesman for the Nation Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin has been reformed in the last several years. So this is a quote from the spokesman. 1 year ago, the Sanhedrin called on Trump to build a temple as Cyrus did 2,000 years ago. He has clearly moved in this direction, but there's still a long way to go and many pitfalls that could prevent that from happening. Trump is facing enormous political pressures. The borders of Jerusalem are still open to the negotiation. The Temple Mount is still not a settled issue, and the United Nations is working hard at trying to convince the world the Jews have no place there. If Trump is to succeed, the Jews have to come together in unity in order for him to remain strong. That was an interesting article, interesting connection that they make here to that. Now, these are linked because of that. Now, I mentioned a couple other things. There is this... getting ahead of myself and my thought. So there's a recognition of the Jewish capital essentially calling others to come to Jerusalem as well. But also, there seems to be this other significant part in this article, as it's mentioned, this third temple to be built. Talks are already happening about building this temple. Apparently, there's this, like I said, there's even a Sanhedrin that has already been set in place, set up officially in 2006. And this article is Sanhedrin appoints high priest in preparation for third temple. Okay, and in 2018, the Temple Mount activists celebrate new altar, but a plea to practice animal sacrifice is rejected. So they've built a new altar. I have an article, this article here. Temple-ready altar dedicated on last day of Hanukkah by activist groups. I'm going to read to you something from this. On the last day of Hanukkah, this is dated December 10th, 2018. On the last day of Hanukkah, which literally means dedication, a new altar built in accordance with all the Jewish laws pertaining to the temple vessels and infrastructure was unveiled and nominally dedicated for use in the yet-to-be-built third temple by several temple activist organizations. The altar is built out of bricks over a wooden frame, and specifically not of stone, since Jewish law requires that the temple and its various structures not be made out of stone that has been hewn by iron implements. The altar itself weighs some 4.5 tons, and the ramp another 2 tons. Okay, so another just an interesting tidbit of what is currently going on. Yes?
I have a question. So they have had land, even though it's not all their land.
Right.
They have to build the temple in that specific place that they couldn't have built one already in their own land where they had.
So that's the big question today. Because now we have this scene. This is the Temple Mount, what's known as the Temple Mount. And what is this structure here? Okay, it's the mosque, or an Islamic mosque, and the Dome of the Rock, as it's called there, the Golden Dome. And it's upon this mount, this is Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah is a significant location in the Bible. That was the place where Abraham went and took Isaac. It was a place where David went and bought the threshing floor of Ornan. Okay, this is a big deal. The temple was built. This is the disputed place. So there's, in Jerusalem itself, there are four quarters. What are the Jew, Muslim, Arab, and what's the last one? Anybody know? I can't remember the fourth one. Anyway, there's four. Yes?
Are they really positive that that's where Solomon's temple was?
No. See, that's even under debate right now, too. There are different questions about, is this really the site where Solomon's temple was?
Where's the altar?
not there. Yeah, not there. So somewhere else in the city.
I was saying just a few moments ago that there is a temple in Jerusalem then?
No.
Oh, I thought...
They're making preparations for it.
I thought somebody had said there's some type of temple there.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well.
No. Okay. Yeah, Ian?
I was going to say, it's interesting with the news articles over the last few years that you just presented us with, the confluence of scriptural prophecy and some of that which is written by the Arabs and also the Jews in the Talmud and the Zohar. And an interesting tidbit, I mean, just to go down a quick rabbit trail, is over the last several years, in parallel with the Human Genome Project, I believe, the Jews have been seeking out those that have a particular lineage in the male chromosome, and they have been seeking out those and targeting primarily Jewish men who have the last name of Cohen, and they found a genetic link, and the Cohen comes from the Hebrew, the Kohen, the high priest. So they've been searching for this and prepping for it for a long time.
They've made a high priest.
Yes. What, right, but I mean, like, they started this, like, a while ago.
Right, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yes?
Now, you would think that where Solomon's temple was so great that there's no, you can't find any evidence of the location. I mean, as great as it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's strange.
Yep.
We had the whaling ball.
Right. Yeah. Angela, are you saying something?
So when they build a new temple, like, that's probably part of where the Antichrist will sit and
right.
all this kind of stuff. And I'm wondering, the New Apostolic Reformation, they're huge on that seven, seven pillars, I think. I can't remember. They're going to take over all the education, government, all those kind of things, and they're going to usher in the new reign of Christ. So this Trump is backed heavily by NAR, like Paul White. So I'm wondering if this is just one more step to...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with those groups, but yeah. Lots going on. I'm not by no means an expert on any of this, but it is interesting to see. Yeah, Gary?
I heard years ago that the Jews in Israel have been collecting money for making all the preparations for the instruments and everything in the temple.
Yeah.
I don't know where they stand on that, but I know that was something 10, 20 years ago they were
pushing
through.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's the case as well. So let's bring this to a conclusion. There is no temple currently, but there are things in the works, at least conversations, apparently a new altar. There's a new Sanhedrin, a new high priest that has been designated as such. There are things that are happening when the 70th week of Daniel's prophecy is coming. Now again, we're not given any information as far as exactly when this will start, okay? But in Daniel's prophecy of the 70th week, there does seem to be this temple, the sacrifice and offering will be made. Now, there's one last thing here that the text mentioned, this time of the Gentiles in verse 2, that they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. Okay, Jesus referenced this in Luke 21:24. They will fall by the edge of the sword, be led away captive into all nations. Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. That's the end of the tribulation period. Okay, that's what John is referencing there. I can't remember who asked that earlier.
Jesus made in reference to Jerusalem in 70 AD, because he alluded to that all the way through, from Matthew 24, Luke, Mark's Gospel, right up to 70 AD.
Yeah, I think that could have been an immediate fulfillment with the long-lasting fulfillment still to come. Yeah. Now, two quick takeaways from today. Number one, the Word of God, spanning hundreds of years of progressive revelation, is consistent and therefore trustworthy. I should have added there. Daniel was written 500s or so, okay, BC, mid-500s BC. John, Book of Revelation, near the end of the first century, so about 600 years. Total consistency, Christ's words in between that. The Word of God is consistent and therefore reliable. Takeaway number two, things are beginning to take place in our world without a lot of international fanfare. I mean, how much of this do you hear about on the news? At least our news. Not a lot. But things are beginning to take place without a lot of international fanfare that seem to indicate a readiness for these events to take place. We shouldn't be surprised at that. It is coming. And as the hymn says, and Lord, haste the day. Okay, so just want to bring this up. So we talk about the temple today. Lord willing, next time, we'll talk about the two witnesses. All right? Good discussion today. You are dismissed.